Lake Charles.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. Boy, we have a group with us today. I am so looking forward to this show today. Festival International de Louisiane is coming up starting next week. And we're going to take a trip back down memory lane, and we're going to, which you don't always get to find out, how an event that is so successful as Festival International is here in Lafayette, how that got started. And my guest in the studio today, Herman Meir, which here at the university, a lot of people know Herman as he was the former executive director and chief curator for the Paul and Lulu Hilliard University Art Museum. He also was a professor here on campus, and he was the founding president of Festival International de Louisiane and the founding president of the board, who I like to refer to as the idea man. So welcome, Herman.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We also have, we'll go to my left, Kathy Weber, who a lot of folks in Lafayette know for years. She was the executive director of the Lafayette Downtown Development Authority. Really, when you think about, I think, Kathy, when you started that job to what is going on now in downtown Lafayette, I mean, it really is night and day in terms of buildings filled and the energy that's down there. Kathy was also an original festival board member of the executive committee. So welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, good to have you here. I also forgot to mention Herman's also an artist himself. And then we have Phil Lank, who has worn more hats than, and you've got a nice one with you today, but he has worn a lot of hats. So many people know Phil. He was formerly the director of community development for the city of Lafayette, and really ties into what we're going to talk about today. He was the festival's first vice president of fundraising, and hats off to you, because that's not an easy job. But Phil has been involved in so much development around this whole Acadiana area. So welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Yeah, it's a great quite a group of heavy hitters we have here today. Herman, we are going to start with you because, you know, a lot of people out there really don't know how Festival came about, and you do.
Well, actually, there was a convergence that took place because Lafayette, for people who maybe weren't living in Lafayette in the middle 80s, Lafayette had experienced an economic downturn. Yeah. I think oil and gas prices were down, and really people were wondering. They were looking for something positive.
Yeah.
They were looking for a way to sort of chart the course, the future of the city. They were looking for good news. And so that's the climate that we were working in, which meant it was a very challenging climate to try to create a new nonprofit organization and create what some people would say another festival, right?
I'm curious, when this first started to come together, Kathy, were you in the position that you were in?
I had just started. Actually, I was under the tutelage of Phil because my background was in planning.
Got it.
And
okay.
urban and regional planning, and also started my career under Phil.
Okay.
And then sort of morphed into the downtown development. So I was still under the city, but I was functioning as executive director.
Okay, and that's when you were the director of community development, Phil.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. So these guys were in place then. All right.
Yeah, and so there are three things I think that I could point to where some of the ideas came from. Number one, in Charleston, South Carolina, there's something called the Spoleto Festival. And it was started, the original one was in Spoleto, Italy. And the director, Giancarlo Manotti, decided he wanted to try to do a mirror image, if you will, in the U.S. And he picked Charleston because it's a charming town. And like our downtown, it offered some opportunities to do an event where you could use existing facilities like theaters and churches and other public spaces. Yeah. And so that's Festival Story 1977. I became aware of it when the Today program on NBC started coming to Charleston each year for the festival, and they do a week's of broadcasting.
Hmm.
So here you are in Lafayette, and you're not in Charleston, but you're watching this broadcast, and it looks, you know, pretty incredible what this town is doing. So that idea stayed with me for a while. And then in 1984, two projects sort of got off the ground at the museum. Many people in town may know Maurice de Dieu. He was a French linguistic attaché who was appointed to come to Lafayette. He was at the French House on campus for a five-year term. His previous assignment had been in Dakar, Senegal.
Hmm.
So what does he bring with him from Senegal? But these folk paintings, these beautifully colored, naive paintings that are painted on glass, they're called a peinture sous verre, and they tell stories of village life. And so he brings these paintings with him. I discover this collection, convince him to do a show at the museum, and he begins to talk about the music of Senegal and about the griot singers.
Yeah.
Of course, something I was totally unfamiliar with. And he said, it would be great if we could bring some of those musicians here. We go to Philippe Goustin, who at the time was director of Cotefil, and Jean
Gaulle. Oh, that's right. I forgot that he was prior to the International Center. Okay.
Yeah. Philippe came from Belgium, began working with Cotefil in the 1970s, and eventually became director. And then we had a Quebec delegation here, and the head was Jean Goyer.
Okay.
They knew of an international agency in Paris, it's like the United Nations of the French-speaking world, that would sponsor cultural exchanges. And they thought we could apply for funding to actually bring Senegalese musicians here. So the application was sent, and it was approved. And these singers, griot singers, came to Lafayette for 1 week. And they performed in the museum surrounded by the paintings of Senegal.
And what instruments did they have
with
them?
Well, this is a husband and wife, Arfan and Kenda Diabate Kouyaté. They were from Senegal, now living in Paris. They were performing musicians. The husband played the kora.
What is that?
Which is a stringed instrument. It's made of a gourd that's cut in half.
Okay, sure.
An animal skin is stretched over it. And then a neck is attached along with 26 strings. And when it's plucked, it sounds like a harp.
Yeah.
And so the husband of the couple would play the instrument primarily, and his wife was the singer. And so they performed in the museum. They performed in public schools in Lafayette. They went to Baton Rouge, performed at Southern University. They were videotaped on LPB for a program called Folks. And they ended their week stay in this building in Burke Hall, in the theater. It was a sold-out performance.
Mm. And that's where it came.
That was one of those events. We worked on the project in 84. The exhibit happened here in January, February 85, and that's when the musicians came. So that date is important, January, February 85. The other thing that happened in 85 was another project that I was working on with a third-year architecture student from Amman, Jordan, Amar Kamash, is now one of the leading architects of Jordan, and he studied here. Unlike most architecture students that have a thesis project where they design one building, he was doing research on ancient village sites in the Jordan River Valley, and he wanted me to help him put together his thesis exhibition to design it. He had taken thousands of color photographs in the Jordan River Valley, and it was like National Geographic, right? So next thing you know, I'm on a plane to Amman, Jordan. That was the summer of 85, right? Right after the Senegal project.
Yeah.
So now I'm in Jordan for a month, and I'm going in the desert, and I'm experiencing another culture. That's the important thing. Returning to Lafayette, I arranged my return airfare so I could spend a week in Amsterdam. I'd never been, and I wanted to go to the art museums. Amsterdam had an India festival that summer, And my hotel was right next to the big concert hall. So I go to a concert of sitar music with all the percussionists. And it was just incredible. And then a week in New York, from Amsterdam, New York. And I get back to Lafayette in August. We all know what Lafayette's like in August. The school was out of session, and it was hot, and it was not exciting. But I reflected upon all of these multicultural experiences mm-hmm. I'd had in the course of, you know, the first three quarters of the year. And I just felt – I kept thinking about Spoleto. And I thought, if there was only a way we could make something like this happen. So that's – when I know I went back to Philippe and Jean because they had helped with the Senegal project and started talking to them. But Kathy and Phil can tell you that from a community development standpoint, they were also very focused on bringing life to the community and the revitalization of downtown. And so this is why I talk about it as a convergence.
Yeah. Did you know the two of these folks, Herman, at that time?
Did I know you?
Well, I think you did. I was going to say, picking up from what Herman had said, is that there was a lot of conversation about what was happening, you know, in Lafayette mm-hmm. and his experiences that were being shared with Philippe and also with Phil and then also with myself because I was just in place and we were beginning to do the planning work for downtown
sure.
initially. And so the history, the heritage, culture, arts, music, all that was going to be a big part of it.
Because I do want to say one thing, Kathy, if you could, because for people listening that may not, you know, that see downtown Lafayette now and how vibrant it is, now I moved here in 92. That was not the case. You know, earlier on, you know, I think with a lot of towns, you know, the downtown became a lot of vacant buildings. There weren't, you know, I remember Chris's Poor Boy was down there and Hoojoo's.
and Antlers.
And Antlers. And mm-hmm. Yeah. But it wasn't what it is today.
It wasn't. And I'm going to just stop a moment, though, and ring Phil's bell on these things because in the early 80s, you know, the price of oil was great and all that. We hadn't gotten into the recession yet.
Yeah.
Development was beginning to happen. Phil and his staff at Community Development were engaged in downtown and launched the three main projects that helped start it all, which was the redo of the Jefferson Towers building, the Gordon Square building, and the city's parking garage. A lot of development happened, and then the rug got pulled out from under everyone. And people scattered, went through the whole real estate depression, really.
Yeah.
People left Lafayette, left Louisiana. So we went through this big high and then this roller coaster, and that's where the conversation about how do we all get started? And Phil ended up having, you know, kind of a foot and a hand in so many things that were going on, the arts, the university, Cotefil, French, downtown, everything. He became the convener, really, of all of us.
Yeah.
Phil, so I'll let you pick it up from there.
Simultaneous with Herman's thoughts on a festival project, where other thoughts going on at City Hall about a festival, a new festival downtown especially. Kathy's predecessor, a fellow by the name of Lloyd Gardner, who was our first downtown development director, had the idea. He said, we really need to do another festival. Lafayette downtown is primed for it right now. And we also undertook a planning effort, a comprehensive plan of downtown. And in part of that process as well was the idea of another festival. At the time, we had festivals like Acadien, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mardi Gras, I guess we would call it. So we got the group together. It was half a dozen people. The three of us, Philippe Coustin, Jean Goyer, the Quebec delegation guy, Julie Calzone, mm-hmm. Gerald Perreault, and Wilfred Pierre, our council mm-hmm. person at the time.
And also Tom Boozer, who was head of the Arts Council at
Tom
that
Boozer.
Time.
And so we started, we put a meeting together, right? That's first step. And we got together and we all started talking. Anybody had this idea, that idea? One of the things I remember distinctly that evolved from that discussion, that first discussion, was we didn't want to do another festival with Ferris wheels and bumper cars.
Sure.
You know,
sure,
and,
yeah.
and Queens. We don't, yeah. With all due respect.
there's enough.
but so we wanted, we didn't want that kind of festival, and we didn't really know what we wanted, but we knew that if we were, we knew we were capable of finding out. And,
in the beginning talks of wanting a festival, was that though tied in very closely to this could also help us revitalize what's downtown?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Not just downtown Lafayette, but the city of Lafayette.
Yeah, yeah. That's
why. Because we recognize early on that festivals are big, big business.
Yeah.
And the big one going on in Louisiana at the time was the Jazz and Heritage Festival, you know, attracting hundreds of thousands of people every year. And so we're watching that and watching other cities around the country and what's going on. And then other cities in Canada, especially other cities in Canada. And fast forward a little bit, it was through – we had a Quebec delegation in Lafayette, of all places, to have a Quebec delegation. But through the Quebec delegation – we get an invitation. Our group gets an invitation to go to Quebec to go to festival school. And we went to visit three festivals in Quebec, the Jazz Festival in Montreal, the Drummondville Folkloric Festival, and the Festival d'Été International de Quebec. And we ended up – the Folkloric Festival is kind of like the dance and costumes and that sort of thing. And that's not what we envisioned. The Jazz Festival was a huge monstrosity of a festival and way, way beyond our means and a really cool festival, but just not what we had envisioned. But the festival in Quebec City, it was just ideal. Mm-hmm. It was multiple venues scattered throughout the downtown area, you know, music from all over the world, primarily the French-speaking world, special activities for kids, outdoor vendors. Everything was just perfect.
Yeah.
So we modeled our festival ultimately after Festival d'Été International de Quebec. It's like an image model. Hmm. One of the things I remember, Cheryl, at that time when we went was being just in awe of the fact that we were there for their 25th anniversary. And that was 27-something years ago, and so they're like 52 and now 53
yeah.
now. But that was their 25th anniversary, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this thing is huge and it's wonderful and it's sustained itself for 25 years. And people come from all over the world to go to it, and the music comes from all over the world. And it was just a perfect idea for what we wanted to do. And so we didn't have far to go. Well, we had far to go. We had to go to Quebec to find it. But we didn't have far to go mentally to figure right. out what it is that we wanted to do. It was all packaged right there.
It was such an eye-opener, too, because of really understanding that it had to be a unique point of difference for Lafayette and what better than our French heritage, and really not focusing in quite yet, but we did, mm-hmm. that I think it's 84 countries, I think, that share around the world
French
our French language or some aspect of the French heritage. And to understand that, well, this is a global, truly a global situation, that we can start small with a festival built around our heritage,
so
music, art, food.
That happened in the initial conversations
that we want to focus
on the French
speaking. The Francophone.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
okay.
It was in our bylaws. Not bylaws, but our mission statement.
Yeah. Louisiana is a former French colony,
right.
like all these other countries. So we have that in common. You know, the Senegalese musicians who came here could not speak English.
The first ones that you had met with.
Right. But of course we could communicate.
That's right.
Because of the French language. And I would say, too, you know, the buzz phrase at the time was economic development through cultural tourism. The state was pushing this.
In the 80s.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that enabled us to
– I don't think the state had heard too much about that.
Office of Tourism. But we were able to get some funding, some support from them early on. I mean, we really were – we were blazing a new trail at this level to do something of an international scope. It wasn't a local festival based on, you know, a seafood or agricultural product. It was something quite else.
Sure. So you came together. You formed a nonprofit.
Right.
A board, executive committee, and we met –
And I'm curious.
Every week for 50 weeks of the year.
Because what was your initial – what was the time frame in terms of when you all first got together and when we want to see the first festival?
Well, we went to –
year and a half.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, year and a half between when it first started and the first one was produced.
Yeah.
And then the next one was 9 months later.
Yeah. Wow.
We went to Canada in the summer of 86. And the first festival was the 4th of July weekend of 87. Now, people ask, why did you do that? And because it was very, very hot that first year. It's the reason we moved it to April the second year.
Yeah.
But
do you remember why you chose 4th
yes, we
of July?
Did. Yes, Philippe Gustin at Cotefil had received an inquiry from an organization called La Semaine Chantante Internationale. These are choral singers from French-speaking countries, and they meet in French-speaking areas of the world. They never met in the United States before. They only meet on the 4th of July weekend, and there are 500 of them. And so we looked at each other rather humorously at our organizational meetings. We said, if no one else comes,
we have
500 choral singers as an audience.
And I don't know if this was real thinking or just a rationale, something we told ourselves. But we were also thinking that we would pick a time of the year that didn't naturally give itself to tourism like the spring does or the fall does.
Sure.
And conventions and things like that that were going on. So the summertime became, this is a new, event date.
There was another reason, too, Cheryl, and there was an organization that funded a lot of the groups that went to Quebec from Africa. And that's called the Agence de Coopération et Culturelle et Technique out of Paris. They're headquartered in Paris. And we met the guy that ran that organization when we were in Quebec. That was another thing that the Quebecois government did for us. They got us into everything. Mm-hmm. Met with the festival organizers, the Agence out of Paris, other governments and that sort of thing. And
they were very welcoming to you in
started,
terms of help.
Yeah, we started lining things up. Mm-hmm. But the Agence de Coopération, so we talked to them about sponsoring groups from Africa to Lafayette. And they said, well, yeah, but they got to go to Quebec first, so we don't have to pay double airfare, right? So they go to fly to Africa, to Quebec City, and then they fly to Louisiana. And so, okay, that's great. We'll do that. But guess what? Their festival is in July.
It's a summer festival.
Yeah. So it ended up being a huge mistake. But we did that, and we ended up, I think, getting three African groups our first year.
Yeah, we did.
Three African groups our first year, sponsored by the Agence de Coopération. And the head guy came to Lafayette, and he said, I'm not coming back here again in July. And he got to Africa.
And he was one of our biggest fans, too. He loved
His name was Hadzi Kodzo.
Hadzi Kodzo.
And he was fabulous.
And he said that we were switching to the spring next year.
But to give an indication, this is 1987. An indication of the support of the Agence, we had the master drummers of Rwanda the first year. There were 30 people, 30 drummers coming from Rwanda. The airline tickets alone were $2,000 per drummer.
Wow.
And that was just one of the groups they sponsored. We had groups from French Guiana and also from the Caribbean, and they paid the bill.
Yeah. Where was the first one in terms of the location?
Across the street from Philippe's office.
Okay.
Which is the Jefferson Street stage
that you know
it as today. That was the original.
Yeah, yeah.
That was our original main stage.
And the Chase Bank parking lot.
You can go, Cecil, you want to say something?
I was just going to say as what we refer to as the Fade Odo stage now.
Right.
Yes. With the big Robert Daffod mural up above.
Yeah.
That was our main stage, our first main stage.
How many stages the first year?
Three,
okay. Yeah,
one big one and two small ones.
We had the what was the food court called?
The Pavillon de Cuisine.
Pavillon de Cuisine. And there was a small performance stage there.
Right. And also Place des Enfants, too.
Place des Enfants.
It was at Cathedral Cuomo.
That was from the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Very nice.
In fact, we really should credit a couple of people. Renee Roberts, who was in charge of arts education at the Acadian Arts Council, took on that area with a lot of volunteers. I mean, we were all volunteers.
That was her baby.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a workhorse, Renee.
And we also could not have done this without Julie Calzone and her agency. I think there may have been a small fee involved, but the most of the work they did was pro bono work. I mean, Julie just adopted this event. She was incredible.
I'm curious, when you went to start presenting, you know, the idea, the concept to maybe potential sponsors, other people to help organize, run it, how was something like that laid out? Were there sketches? Were there, you know, paragraphs written? How does something like that come about from the idea to getting people on board?
It was done in a very professional manner. One of the things I did initially was to write a white paper on festivals and their benefits to communities the festivals and their benefits to communities financially, and we used that essentially to help secure funding from the city. Our first budget, Cheryl, was $125,000, which is a pretty big amount. That has nothing to do with anything that was sponsored by anybody else, the agents or other governments. That was just our local budget for production and the like, and the $125,000. And when we were in Quebec, we learned that half of the festivals up there are pretty much government sponsored. The other half of the budget is private business sponsored, mm-hmm. and so there again was our model. And so we had a $125,000 goal, and we went to the city and asked for $75,000, and we were successful in getting that $75,000. And there also in lies some big supporters of the festival at that point in time was the mayor, Douglas Straps, Glenn Weber, the CAO, and they always said, they told me, he said, look, if it's okay with George Lewis, who was the auditor for the city, it's okay with me. I had George Lewis to the list as well.
Yeah. I mean, the auditors really have a lot.
No, because Doug said, look, if it's all right with George, it's okay with me.
Yeah.
So
we should remember Walter Como.
Walter Como with the...
And Donnie Robin?
Yeah. Year two.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Year
okay.
two. They elected not to participate year one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I do remember that. But they did participate year two. And then the council, we had five councilmen at the time, and now it's nine, and so it's a lot easier to get things done if you figure it all out in advance. And one of the things that we did to figure it all out is to get Wilfred on our board, Wilfred Pierre, as one of our board members, and he went to Quebec. He saw what everybody else had went.
Okay.
And so he saw the vision and he saw the potential and all. And see, he was instrumental in helping us to sell it to the council. So we got five votes on the council, 5-0, $75,000 in the bank for the festival, the first one. The next thing was to get the other $50,000, and that was two visits to two business people here in town. And I'm happy to name them. One was Herbie Schilling with Schilling Distributing, and the other was Larry Smith with Acadiana Bottling.
Okay.
Each of those gentlemen put up $25,000 sight unseen. They had no idea. They had no clue what we had in mind, what we were going to do. But they just had a lot of faith in us, in our group, that it was going to be something good and something beneficial and something that they would be happy to be involved with.
Yeah.
And so they each put up $25,000. And there we were with $125,000 in 1986, was it?
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of money.
Yeah,
a lot of money.
Right.
But we had some anxiety about, you know, signing contracts and all of this, as you would imagine. But now everything is – we're moving forward, and we're moving forward full steam. We're going to
do it. Well, we're going to take a short break. We're going to listen to – Cecil, let's do the first one. La Bottine – I'm going to let you pronounce, Herman.
It's La Bottine Souriante.
And this is a band actually who has been around this area for festival and for some other reasons too, coming here quite often. They have been now over the years. And they are originally from – this I should know. Cecil, you can chime in. Yeah, they are. I'm starting to think of what part of Canada, but they are originally from Quebec, and they've been around since 1976. And I just know that that's a band that a lot of people here in the area do know, and we are going to listen to a cut, the Reel de la Souvenir?
Correct.
All right, and we'll be back shortly.
Saran. And
that was La Boutine Saran, and welcome back. Welcome back to The Exchange with this is KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. And we are listener-supported, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette here at Cypress Lake Studios. Hats off to everybody who continues to support us. You can go to the website. There is a button you can click for donate, and it is a safe, secure site. Festival International de Louisiane is starting this next week on Wednesday. And we are talking today with my three guests, Kathy Weber, Herman Meir, and Phil Lank, talking about how that festival first came together. 1987 was the first year. 86, a lot of planning and a lot of thoughts. So we were talking about the planning part of that. So it's time for the festival to take place that first year. How do you remember how many performance bands, performance artists, even the individuals? Do you remember how many you had at that time?
Well, of course, we had the 500
you
choral
had the 500
singers.
Choral singers.
So that was a good start. And and then, of course, we had all the tremendous the African groups. We had groups from Canada, from Quebec, for sure. Groups from the Caribbean, from Martinique and Guadeloupe, and from French Guiana.
And I want to take a step back, too, because compared to today, I'm assuming that first year was done strictly by volunteer. There wasn't a paid festival employee, or was there?
Well, we hired a lady by the name of Tina Girard.
Oh, Tina, yeah.
But I think that was after the first year that she started. Because we had a fast track the second year. We had 9 months to produce the second one, year two.
Because you decided to switch the month.
Because we changed from July to April.
Okay.
So it shortened our year by 3 months, 4 months. And so that's when I think we came to the realization. And we made a little money, too. So we had some money, and we came to the realization we really needed some help. So I think that's when we hired Tina part-time.
Right, and Tina was on the board for the original one,
and
then she moved into a coordinating position.
Okay.
And she and Jean
Goyer, who was French-Canadian, was the bilingual assistant.
That's right, okay.
Because communicating with a lot of the foreign groups are their managers, the contracts a lot of the negotiation happened in French, and so they worked really well together, and it was very successful. We also had performers from France, and we had a great francophone representation that first year.
How many days was the first one?
Four days. Mm-hmm. One of the things about the other bands from those French-speaking areas, those were sponsored by the governments involved, like the French government sponsored the groups from the Caribbean, I believe, like Guadeloupe and all, and the Canadian government and the Cape Breton government sponsored groups, and then the Agence out of Paris.
Sure. So.
Now, coupled with that, we realized that the festival provided an opportunity for us to showcase Louisiana groups.
And you.
In the context of this international francophone arena. So this gave great visibility to them.
Do you remember who you had the first year from here?
Oh, gosh. We'd have to almost go in the archives now.
Well, I think Beausoleil was
we probably had Beausoleil, maybe Steve Riley. We had Zydeco.
I think the Sam Brothers.
Yeah, the Sam Brothers played very nice.
Maybe Nathan.
And we also had gospel music, you know.
Yeah.
We had gospel, blues, jazz, Zydeco, rock, traditional Cajun music, in addition to all the francophone groups.
I think the intent was a mixture of 50% international, 50% local.
Yeah.
That was pretty much our standard that we wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
And the other dimension that we haven't talked about yet is what happened with PR and marketing and the press that was generated, which was tremendous.
And remember, folks, this was pre-social media.
That's
this was pre-internet.
Pre-internet.
I mean, which is a whole – that was a whole other thing.
No cell phones.
Yeah.
No cell phones. And I don't know if it was the first year, but with – LPB was here, by the way. They videotaped the entire festival and then rebroadcast it. They made many, many, many programs on a weekly basis. On Sundays, you could tune in and watch individual performances from the festival. But then the French press was here.
Yeah.
and then CNN.
It really just captured the imagination, I think, of everyone that, you know, upstart Lafayette, Louisiana could launch such such a huge, you know, event, such a huge happening that had so much meaning to everybody.
Yeah.
You were asking earlier, how did people respond? And, you know, Phil was handling a lot of hospitality. Herman, of course, was kind of being our ambassador, and being French-speaking, he could really take that role and talk with all of the governmental entities that were here as well. And I was always on the street because I was doing a lot of production and back and forth and all of that. And I can tell you that people would just, like, I'd walk down the street and people would just come up and just hug you. Hug you. They just wouldn't even – didn't even say anything at all. They would just hug, big smiles on their face, and, you know, they would walk on. And I think they were just kind of in awe that this could be happening in Lafayette. And the experience, I think, was just so positive for everybody.
It's kind of interesting remembering back that one of the things that we needed to do was find a place to keep the performers downtown when they were down there, and, you know, off the main street, and, you know, a little private area for them. And we had an old city building that was the old city hall, where Philippe's office is now, the International Center.
Yeah.
But it had been almost condemned. It was abandoned, and it had been used as a parish prison before. You know, it's used right before we got in there. We went in, we sent some crews in there, and we cleaned it all out and converted it into a hospitality center for all the performing artists.
Yeah.
And we got we had the restaurants bring in food beer and all that kind of stuff, and it was just a delightful area. And then the main stage was right across the street,
sure.
So it worked very good logistically in terms of the performers being able to go get on and off stage and just, you know, walk back to the hospitality center.
Yeah.
So. Well, Phil, do we want to mention in the context of hospitality that fantastic group of individuals,
absolutely,
who came together and almost generated celebrity status,
yeah,
as cooks. It became a tradition, and they were called the Bubbas.
Yeah. That was the following year the Bubbas came into existence. And with Ray Guidry and a group of, they call themselves Duck Camp Chefs.
Very nice.
Ray and his wife, Debbie, and Jeff Moss, and
the
whole slew.
But we started the second year, I think we moved across the street to the old La Parisienne building,
mm-hmm,
and then we set up shop over there for hospitality. And there was a big parking lot in the back that we kind of fenced off, and we had the Duck Camp Chefs of Bubbas back there with their big pots and all cooking. And they were
doing out for the hospitality.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, we even put a stage back there for performances. And then we had it all, ran wiring and all, we had TVs. So we had live TVs from the main stages and all.
Yeah.
Right,
so they could see what was happening.
See what was going on.
You know, one sign of the success of the festival, within a few years, I would watch programming on TV5, right, the French television network that we can all get on cable. And it was a French it was like a music show. It was in a big theater with a live audience and a lot of groups performing. And when many of those groups were introduced, they would be introduced by saying that they had recently performed at the festival in Lafayette.
Very nice.
It was so great. The Bubbas, too, I want to say this on two different levels. One is what we were trying to accomplish conceptually with the festival might not have connected with, you know, just a whole segment, mm-hmm, of Lafayette. But through the Bubbas getting involved in that, I mean, they really, you know, set it up.
They got a lot of the local people.
And had fun doing it and really made it a community thing, so much so that all of our council people and, you know, Walter Como came and cooked. And
it was the place to be.
They would serve. It was like its own performance stage, really, yeah, almost, the Bubbas.
The other cool thing, Cheryl, is that they brought Louisiana culture to our guests.
Exactly.
You know, That's right.
You know, the epitome of Louisiana culture. They brought that right in your face.
Right there.
Right. With the food and the music and all. So it was a lot of fun.
Because that's such a big part of those performers going back and talking about, hey, we want to go back there again.
Correct.
The next,
absolutely.
You know?
And performers still today, they died to come and perform at this event.
Yeah.
We have to also credit the Chefs Association. There was a Chefs Association. I don't know if it still exists. That Pavillon de Cuisine.
A state association, or was it
no, local.
Ah.
All the chefs, and they have an association. They set up an outdoor kitchen. I mean, it was phenomenal, the work that went into this for the Pavillon de Cuisine in that parking lot across from what used to be the F&B Towers. Is it a Chase Tower
now? Chase
Bank. Yeah, yeah.
And so that parking lot, at the we had a stage on one side. We had chairs and tables, and at the back of that lot, I mean, they actually had, you know, gas-powered stoves, and they were deep-frying things and cooking things. I mean, the labor involved, the dedication is what's so remarkable. And that spins over into the volunteers.
That's right. That's right. And I want to talk about that a little more. But I want you, Hermit, to talk about – because when we were listening to the song, we weren't on air, you were talking about the Rwanda – was it the drumming? You talked about that experience for you the first year.
Oh, yes. this group was sponsored by this agence out of Paris. And, you know, we didn't have a videotape or a CD or anything to watch in advance. So, I mean, we put our trust in this organization that had been doing this for a long time. It was a little bit of a surprise. We had great anticipation. I remember being near the main stage where they were going to perform, and I saw smoke rising from the back of the stage, and I thought, oh, my God, call the fire department. And I go back there. The drummers had collected twigs from the trees and had built a fire to heat the heads of their drums. This is how they tune the drum heads.
Yeah.
So I was relieved, and we didn't call the fire department. And they get up on stage. And what was unique about, you know, a lot of people have heard the Burundi drummers who came here on two occasions. The Rwandans were here only that first year. Their drumming pattern is very, very different than the Burundi drummers. The Rwandan drumming patterns are extremely complex and syncopated. And there's something so primal about that drumming.
Yeah.
It reaches deep into your psyche. It's mesmerizing.
And plus the physical presence of them, because they were tall, they were thin, they were like – you looked like you were watching a ballet, really, if you had the pleasure of being able to see the Rwandans that first year. They were so delicate in everything, their hand motions, the way they danced, and the drumming. So it was quite special.
I remember being on stage when they were on stage, and it was extraordinary feeling. Just like – it's like you were part of something really, really bizarre.
That should get the chills.
Like,
down,
oh,
huh?
It just gives me the chills thinking about it.
Yeah.
But I also, Cheryl, remember at that point in time, looking down Jefferson Street from that stage, which is kind of like where the International Center is today, and you can see all the way down to where Home Savings Bank, where the curve is, where that front. And it was wall to wall people all the way down. And I remember saying to myself, golly, look what we created.
That's a cool – I mean, what a cool experience.
Yeah,
huh?
And then should we be happy or scared? I don't know.
See, now that's an important comment, though. Should we be happy or scared?
We wondered. We all enjoyed the scale of those early years, the scale of the event. It was very manageable. You know, we had close to 1,000 volunteers, even in those early years. But we liked the intimacy of it, and we wondered – what might happen. And in fact, it has happened. I mean, it's become much bigger than we ever dreamed was possible.
Yeah.
But similar in size to Quebec.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's very similar in size to Quebec now.
Yes.
With a half a dozen stages or so that they have, and very similar now.
And one thing I might mention in conjunction with that, because downtown has come a long way, so I know sometimes we were often embarrassed because after having gone to Quebec and Montreal and everywhere else, there were beautiful, just monumental public spaces and streetscapes and things like that. So a lot of the things that were in the plan that would take many, many years to unfold, such as the Jefferson Streetscape and the Arts Center and the parks that we have now and all of that, you know, were a not just an outgrowth of that, because they were in the plans, but they really did help to convince people that, you know, we deserve this, to have beautiful
exactly.
public spaces and kind of civic engagement, if you will, not to be too about the whole thing, but it was a big part of trying to move forward with that.
And when you walk downtown, I mean, because those two things really paralleled each other in terms of their creation and their growth. You know, in downtown now you walk through there, and no matter what time of year it is, festival has a presence.
Yeah.
You know?
Everything that we said it would be done economic developmently and from a downtown revitalization perspective, everything that we said it would occur occurred.
And
even more, even more. Well, and a good example of that, Cheryl, is the International Trade Center, Philippe Gustin, that job, the whole initiative was precipitated by the festival.
Mm-hmm.
What we found and realized that during the festival, we had a lot of people come from our sister cities from around the world, from France, from Canada, and part of the delegations were business people. And when they got here, said they were interested in festival. They were also interested in meeting their counterparts in business.
Mm-hmm.
And so we as best we could, we helped facilitate even that first year. But then we said next year we've got to have a program together. We have people and hosts and a program and receptions and the whole thing. and so that's what we did the second year. We created an international. Business exchange is what it was, IBE, International Business Exchange. And so that thing took on its own life. And from that, the building that we had converted from a jail to the hospitality center,
the old
City Hall building, became the International Trade Center. The next year, we went back to the council and we said, well, now we need $2 million. Because we want to renovate that building.
That's right. And what was the response from them? Was it?
It was positive. It was 100% positive. And for those that are involved in government today and are listening, you can learn a lot by involving your council in the process.
Yeah.
And so during the course of the festival, we had the council invited and involved in everything. And so they felt so much a part of the deal. It was amazing. It was an amazing thing to see.
Herman, I'm thinking too of you, not only running, teaching here, but directing the art museum, but being an artist yourself, the level that it affected you and, what effect it had on you as an artist, seeing that come to life. I mean, that had to be just incredible.
Well, it's important to live in a community that is nourishing.
Yeah.
In terms of the creative spirit. And
that's right.
Everyone needs that.
Yeah.
That energy and the brilliance of human creativity. And the festival really is a celebration of human creativity.
Yeah.
As it's expressed globally. So it's a way for people in Lafayette to feel connected.
That's right.
One aspect we didn't talk on, but hearing you speak about that, the art, we had an organization called the Artist Alliance at that time. And Tina was part of that, many, many others, Gwen Hutzler, so many of them, that engaged
local artists.
It was in the hardware store.
Okay.
The next door to Antlers, and then kind of gave way to other things.
Yeah.
But that was a big, big part of it.
Do you know, I remember the first, when I had moved here, one of my first experiences was Festival International.
Yeah.
And it was at the hardware store. And I remember it was Sonny Landreth playing. And he introduced Marcy Lacouture to sing for him. But that was such a cool event for me that night, just to be in that space, before you even got to the rest of the festival. Mm-hmm. I forgot the Artist Alliance. That was a big deal for that.
It was interesting because all of these people knew each one another and involved in different groups and different in things and all. But we were able to pull everybody together to collaborate and to make it happen.
Yeah.
So it was a beautiful thing.
We were fortunate because I had two organizations, the Downtown Development Authority, but also Downtown Lafayette Unlimited, which is a membership based.
Yeah.
So a lot of the volunteer power came through the mechanism of having DLU in place. And I wanted to say hats off to Jody Netterveld, who handled all that for us at that time, and particularly the concessions. But it was also a way for all the business people and the corporate folks in Lafayette to get involved in the festival, even if they weren't handling production. So they would come and pour beer or sell merchandise or do whatever. And that's happening still today
that way.
But that was also became a model for that kind of engagement, too.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that, you know, I've been involved in a lot of community projects, you know, throughout my career. But the individuals that came forward to work on this festival, it was the most extraordinary group I've ever worked with.
Yeah. And probably had a lot to do with the fact that it happened the second year and how many years after. I mean, because there's a lot of events that come together that don't happen the second year, maybe only a couple, and it's, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think what – I mean, I've looked back and thought about that a lot. And I think that the base that we put, the foundation that we laid was so strong and so well thought out that it just everybody could relate to it and tie into it and feel that they were a part of it, and so the evolution has occurred in that in that sense. It's everybody feels like it's their deal.
Yeah.
Even to this day, there's an article in the paper this morning recognizing some volunteer, you know, 27 years later.
That's
you
right.
know, for his efforts in. He's a French. I think he's a French teacher, anyway, recognizing him as Volunteer of the Year for festival. I said, "How cool is that?"
Yeah, the community involvement has stayed very strong.
How cool
for
is
this.
That?
That's right.
And you know what else is impressive is that the concept has remained pure.
Mm-hmm.
It's remained focused.
Yeah.
There was a post festival show. There was a lot of. You know, accolades. All of us were walking like we were, you know, walking on air. But it was remarkable. Letters to the editor, you know, people, the newspapers and the TV shows and all. But there was one letter in particular that I'll never forget. It was said very short. That this is the best thing that's ever happened to Lafayette. That
sums it up.
Pretty significant.
That's right. Folks, we need another hour. It was I can't tell you how thrilled I was to have you come on here today because festival is such a wonderful time here, and it's such a part of this area, and it's so nice to hear from the folks who, you know, who were there from day one. My guests today on the show have been Kathy Weber, Herman Meir, and Phil Lank, and it's going to be festival time starting next Wednesday. You can go to the Festival International de Louisiane website to find out, any kind of information you need to know about the festival, from the schedules to where things are located to who's involved and to the history. What are we going to go out with, Herman?
We're going.
Which one should we pick?
We're going out with a group from France. No, we're going with Dissidenton.
Okay, should we do
Dissidenton
that?
Dissidenton played here in 1988, Algeria, Morocco, and Berlin. How's that for a combination?
Very nice. This sums up what festival is all about. Everybody have a good week. We'll see you at festival. Thank you.
Sure. Monley Kleinpeter swinging it on a Friday night for KRVS's Big Band Swings. Plus, at no extra charge, we'll sway you with nice, slow ballads. It's a cornucopia of nostalgic sounds. Friday nights, 7 until 9. Plus, climb on board the Big Band Swings Express Wednesday night at 9 for a special one-hour repeat. All on public radio for Acadiana, KRVS in Lafayette Lake Charles. And you can stream our audio at krvs.org. Love to have you along for the Big Band Swings and other things. Wing ding.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.